Hello, everyone. Good morning and good afternoon, according to where you are worldwide. My name is Benedetta Legranzi. I am the technical lead of the WHO program called Clean Care is Safer Care within the Patient Safety Department. I'm very pleased to introduce my colleague from WHO, Selva Camassi, today as the speaker for today's free WHO teleclass on infection control. Selma is a very nice and knowledgeable colleague leading the injection safety program within WHO and coordinating the Safe Injection Global Network SIGN. This topic, as you can imagine, is very relevant to infection control and to patient safety in general. And I'm very pleased also to announce that we have recently started to collaborate within WHO between this program and our patient safety department to a new project on injection safety. To prove that injection safety, in particular the WHO program, is particularly committed to the topic of patient safety, I would invite you to go to their web page and read, actually, a statement that they used to present themselves. This is the extract from the Hippocratic Oath, which states, "I will follow that system of regimen which, according to my ability and judgment, I consider best for the benefit of my patients and abstain from whatever is deleterious and mischievous." I think that this explains a lot about the commitment and the achievements of the WHO injection safety program and will be very well developed within Selma's presentation today. Therefore, I would like to let her the floor to introduce us and really walk us through this topic, which is very relevant, in particular for low-middle-income countries. Thank you, Selma.
Thank you very much, Benedetta, for these very nice words and kind words for me as a person and for the program, for the injection safety program at WHO. Greeting everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, as mentioned by Benedetta. The purpose of this talk is to present the strategy that the World Health Organization and the Safe Injection Global Network propose in response to an increasing burden of evidence suggesting that overuse of injections and unsafe injection practices combine to account for a large-scale transmission of blood-borne pathogens worldwide. Next slide includes the different points we will see together in this presentation. We'll start with a historical perspective behind the development and the launch of the WHO Injection Safety Program and the Safe Injection Global Network. I will provide you with some facts and figures on injections worldwide. Then we'll go through the Safe Injection Global Network, what it is about, what it means, and how it started. Then we'll see together the WHO and SIGN strategies to ensure rational and safe use of injections worldwide at global level, but also at country level. We'll see together achievements so far, and we will try to answer to the question, are we done with injection safety? And unfortunately, I can already say that no, we are not done yet. So let me just first start with sine roots, or how the injection safety story started. Syringes were first introduced in 1848, and doctors were happy to find a new way of giving medications and treating their patients. But things became complicated 100 years later when, in the 1940s, the hepatitis B virus was discovered, and got even worse in the 80s when the hepatitis C virus, but also the HIV viruses, were discovered. And why things became difficult, because we knew that these viruses can be transmitted through blood. And since when we give injection, we get in touch and in contact with blood, we needed to find a solution not to transmit these pathogens through injections. So we had two options. Either we continue to use the reusable glass syringes, but then we need to sterilize them. And what was usually done, and the way these were usually sterilized, it was steam sterilization, but we got to know through injection safety assessments that this process is difficult because it needs time, it needs fuel, it needs spare parts, and it was not usually well done in countries, which posed then a problem of not using non-sterile syringes. The other option would be to switch to disposable, single-use, sterile syringes. But then, as you can imagine, we need a continuous supply in sufficient quantities, and the issue of waste management became obvious already at that time. What are we going to do with the used syringes and especially needles? So, and a continuous supply is also a problem in resource-deprived settings and low-income countries. Then, between the 1980 and 1990s, there were major steps were taken during that decade in terms of ensuring injection safety. And while the WHO Essential Drug Program issued an anthropology document on injections, but then the major steps were made in the immunization program under the lead of people like Michel Zaffran, Anthony Battersby, and others. And I would like just to draw your attention to three key dates, which are 1986, when WHO and UNICEF issued a policy on single sterile syringe and needle for each immunization injection. And in 1994, there was the Yamoussoukro Declaration, by which all ministers of health were urged to ensure that only 5%, to decrease the proportion of unsafe injections from 30% to 5% by 1997, meaning in 3 years, which was a great challenge. And 1997. I would like to tell you about the bundling policy for mass immunization campaigns, which was issued by WHO and UNICEF again, since we are talking about immunization. And the bundling policy is about procuring at the same time and together the exact number of doses and the matching number of sterile single-use injection devices, meaning syringes, but also sharp containers to be able to collect the used syringes and to prevent needle stick injuries, not only for healthcare workers, but also for the community. And it became obvious then that there was a need to have a WHO program and to have a WHO-based coordinator to address and to take care of injection safety. A year later, and it was a very important year, WHO issued a special number of the bulletin of the WHO specifically on injection safety. And an article written by Kane and Al documented and even gave figures and trends about the transmission of hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV through unsafe injection practices, and they gave figures by WHO region and globally. And the cherry on the cake was obviously when the media started talking about unsafe injection practices. And next slide shows the San Francisco Chronicle first page on October 1998, where it was showing a child, an African child, playing with a used syringe and talking about the fast track to global disaster, talking about unsafe injection practices. So then it became obvious that we needed to do something. We needed to have a program. We need to have something concrete and major and to take major steps in order to address all these problems and to stop the spread of blood-borne viruses through unsafe injection practices. And this is how, and next slide shows us the inception of SIGN, of the Safe Injection Global Network. It started late 1999. The name was initially Safe Injection Network, but then it was changed to Safe Injection Global Network because it put together and brought together people from all over the world. It was the home of the Safe Injection Global Network was decided to be at WHO, and the secretariat is hosted by the WHO since then. The format of this network is a secretariat, again hosted by WHO, and have SIGN participants and SIGN members. The format, secretariat, national chapters, and SIGN listserv. And there was a plan at that time to have the first meeting of the Safe Injection Global Network to launch this network and to launch WHO Injection Safety Program. So next slide addresses the Safe Injection Global Network components. And it is a voluntary association of stakeholders around the world having the same and common interest in injection safety issues and working very hard to achieve safe, but not only safe, but appropriate use of injections worldwide. And we'll see later on during this presentation the problem related to overuse of injections. SIGN is two components, SIGN Associates and the Secretariat, and these stakeholders and the network agree to collaborate in information exchange, coordination of communication strategies, and a development of a common strategic framework with joint activities to be implemented where needed. Next slide is a list, but not exhaustive list, unfortunately, because otherwise it would be the one slide will not be enough. It's just to give you an overview about key associates of the Safe Injection Global Network, mainly international organizations and programs, NGOs all over the world, governments, universities, healthcare workers, student and consumer organizations, consultants and experts, but also industry, because we think that this is a golden opportunity to start a very nice public-private partnership, because to be able to address unsafe injection practices and talking about devices, we need to have a close collaboration with our industry partners to find solutions about reuse and overuse of injections. The following slide is the way we usually represent this network. It's a visual aid to be able to just think and remember SIGN as soon as we see this. And beside this external collaboration and partners on injection safety, we also have a very close collaboration within WHO headquarters, regional offices, and country offices. And in this slide, I wanted to show you how the injection safety program at headquarters is collaborating very closely with all the departments and clusters listed here, because injection safety cannot be a standalone vertical program. Injections are a cross-cutting issue between many health programs, and I cannot imagine or think of one health program which doesn't have injections included at some point of the program, and therefore a close collaboration was really needed to be able to do something across the organization but also outside of the organization. Now, moving on to the next slide, let's see what kind of data and what information we had at that time when the program started, the WHO Injection Safety Program started, but also when the Safe Injection Global Network was launched. In the year 2000, we knew that each year in developing countries, 16 plus billion injections were given every year. Among these 16 billion injections, 5 to 10% only were for immunization, because most of the vaccines are administered by injections, while 90 to 95% of the rest of injections were given for therapeutic purposes. And when we think that most medications used in primary care can be administered orally, this gives us already an idea about the overuse of injections. And then we started looking at practices, and the following slide is just images taken. It's real images taken when we were assessing injection practices in very in different countries, in different areas of the world, and you can see the problem of these supposedly single-use syringes being used and then roughly rinsed and then reused on other patients. And the guy, it's a funny, one feels like laughing, but it's not a funny thing. This guy is a healthcare worker, and he was moving around with his used syringe to give the next injection to the next patient using the same syringe. And this picture is taken from real life. The other image is also taken from in a country where there is a recycling option to recuperate the plastic syringes. But then these children are asked to collect all used syringes, to remove the needles, and you can easily imagine the risks related to this removal of the needles with bare hands in order to get the plastic syringes and sell them for a few pennies to these recycling plants for plastic. The next slide shows an injection preparation table, and it's an image taken in one of the Central Asian republics. And this slide is not actually showing a reuse of equipment, but rather many other breaks in infection control, and you can see the needle, which was removed. We don't know how it was removed from the syringe. We can see the vial full of blood. We can see the lady working with bare hands, without gloves, transferring the blood from a syringe to a tube. And this is really high-risk procedures and behaviors. The next slide is showing something I would like to emphasize here, is that injection safety is not only about equipment and supplies, but it is also about education, and it's about behavior. Because in this slide, the picture was taken during a mass immunization campaign, and the healthcare workers, vaccinators, were provided with sharps containers, the yellow boxes that you can see at the on the floor just in front of the healthcare workers. So they were supposed to discard and to collect all used syringes into the sharps containers immediately after the injection. But when we looked at what is happening just close to the feet of these healthcare workers, we can see that used syringes are on the floor while we are having the sharps containers just sitting very nicely there and not being used. And this we really need to keep in mind, that to address unsafe injections, it's not only about providing very nice and safety-engineered injection devices or equipment, but it's also about awareness raising, about communication, and about training. Once we have started having these injection safety assessments, and by the way, WHO did 90 injection safety assessments in 90 different countries. Three major areas of concern were identified. The first one is, of course, the reuse of injection equipment, putting the patients at risk of getting contaminated with bloodborne pathogens. The second area of concern is about the unsafe collection of used sharps and used syringes. And the risk here for healthcare workers is very high to get needle stick injuries and to get infected by bloodborne pathogens because the sharps are not discarded properly. And the third major problem, which is a little bit more difficult to address because it's not only the matter of the Ministry of Health, but it needs to be addressed with together with other ministries in countries like the Environment, the Ministry of Environment, the Ministry of Industry, and many other people, is the unsafe disposal and the management of healthcare waste. These three areas of concern and issues are, of course, beside the fact that we need also to address the overuse of injections. Based on the assessments done by WHO, we were able to develop this chart by WHO region, showing the number, the yellow bars show the mean number of injections per person per year, while the red bars show the proportion or the number of injections given with reused injection equipment. And as you can see, that the highest number of injections per person per year was seen in the Eastern Europe and Central Asia part of the world, with around 11 injections per person per year, while the highest rate of reuse was seen in the Middle East countries, what we call the EMRO region of WHO. Now, I would like to tell you a little bit more about another problem which we need also to address, is the overuse of injections. And overuse of therapeutic injections is often attributed to patients' demand. But then, according to studies conducted in few countries, including Indonesia, and you need to look at this chart starting from the bottom, the box where 5 to 20% of patients preferring injections is written. So the proportion of patients who actually prefer injections does not exceed 5 to 20% of patients. However, this minority who prefers injections, when it goes to providers, they demand for injections. They ask for injections when they go to see the doctor and seek for health care. And then, because of this strong pressure from these patients, doctors and providers in general think that the patients prefer injections. And then they start over-prescribing injections to all patients, including the 80% of those who do not prefer injections. And then this is where the miscommunication comes from. The majority of patients who actually do not prefer injections, but who are prescribed and given injections by healthcare providers, they tend to think that since the doctor is prescribing injections, it means that injections are better than oral formulation. And this very strange and curious discrepancy between the respective perceptions of the patient and the provider, who each believe it is the other one who prefers injections, that leads to cognitive dissonance by Indonesian researchers and by all those who work on overuse of injections globally. And when we look at the reasons through surveys in different countries, it's in the following slide, we looked at reasons for popular demand for injections. And you'll see that we have the most different and strange reasons. So in Pakistan, people think that injections are stronger medications, while in South African countries, they think that the injection pain is a marker of efficacy. And I let you read all the other reasons behind preference for injections by patients. But when we look at motivations for overuse of injections among healthcare workers, we also here find different reasons. Like in Romania, they believe that they have a better efficacy, and it is another way or another means to directly observe therapy and compliance with treatment regimens. And the other reason behind overuse of injections among healthcare workers, which is very difficult to overcome, is the financial incentive behind giving injections. You know that when a doctor or a healthcare worker gives an injection, he gets money for this giving an injection. And while working on reducing overuse of injections, this is very difficult to address because we are touching at the financial income of healthcare workers, especially that usually they have low wages and low salaries, and this is a way to complement their salaries. So here we need to find a very smart way to overcome this this issue. The reasons behind unsafe injection practices, whether it is reuse of injection devices between patients or not discarding properly the used sharps, they are explained by lack of awareness regarding the risks associated with unsafe injections. And we were able to collect this information through the injection safety assessment tool, which had interview questions with healthcare workers, asking them what are the risks or what are the diseases that can be transmitted through unsafe injections. And we were really surprised to see that not all healthcare workers nor doctors were able to list or to cite at least the three major ones, HIV, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C. Although in countries where HIV prevalence is high, this was the first response, HIV, but HCV and HPV were not known by everybody. The other reason behind unsafe injection practices is, of course, the lack of injection supplies. We've seen sometimes that injection devices are lacking, and stockouts often occur in hospitals or in health centers. And we need to look, and in order to ensure that we have sufficient supply of injection equipment, we need to make sure that enough money is available to buy and to procure injection devices in sufficient quantities, but also to have a procurement and distribution channel from the central procurement department to the end of use and the point of use of injections and of syringes. And the third reason is the lack of disposable infrastructure for injection equipment. And here again, we are talking about the waste management and the sharps waste management problems. Looking very quickly at the risks associated with unsafe injection practices, you all know that these risks are either bloodborne pathogen transmission or abscesses, and there can be also nerve damage with risk of paralysis, and we saw that in children receiving immunization injections getting paralysis following injections. How are these viruses transmitted, or the main means of transmission? The main mean is, of course, patient to patient because of this reuse issue. And when we talk about reuse, we don't mean actually only reuse of the whole device at the same time. Some misconceptions among healthcare workers is they are actually doing reuse without even knowing. So they think, and this happened even in developed countries, that changing the needle while keeping the syringe is safe. And we all know that because we aspirate before giving an injection, we can get blood into the syringe, and even by changing the needle, we can still transmit blood-borne viruses because of the blood in the syringe. The following slide summarizes some of the epidemiological studies conducted to assess the consequences of unsafe injection practices. Like in Moldova, for example, a country highly endemic for hepatitis B, where close to 10% of the population is infected. The results of a case-control study suggested that 52% of all new cases of hepatitis B infections between 1994 and 1995 were attributable to injections. And when injection frequency is extremely high and when infection control practices are extremely poor, such as in Romania, orphanages in the early 90s, HIV may be transmitted. And at that time, in 1990, 20% of orphanages' children were infected as a result of unsafe injection practices, and this was documented. Now coming to after having given you this country examples and fragmented information, WHO was able to develop in the year 2002 the global burden of disease from unsafe injection practices and give figures worldwide about the magnitude of the problem and posed by unsafe injection practices. So in 2002, but this was published in 2003 and 2004 later on, WHO estimated that 16 billion injections were given annually worldwide, but mainly in low and middle-income countries, that unsafe injection practices are responsible every year of 21 million hepatitis B infections, representing 30% of all new cases, which is enormous. 2 million of hepatitis C cases, new cases, representing around 40% of all new cases worldwide, and they were responsible of around 5% of all new HIV cases worldwide. So you see that by addressing this simple, very frequent procedure, we are able to have a very high impact on the disease burden in countries, really, and to decrease and to reduce healthcare expenses to treat hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and HIV cases. In some areas of the world, globally, we estimated that around 40% of injections were given with reused injection equipment, but this proportion was as high as 70% in some regions and in some countries. And over 70% of injections are unnecessary in some regions. And in some countries where we went, almost 90% of outpatients, when they go to the hospital or to the healthcare center, when we looked at their exit prescriptions, 90% of these patients were having an injection, at least one. So in the year 2000, and based on all this information, the World Health Organization defined a safe injection based on all these major issues we we saw and we noticed in countries. A safe injection is one that does not harm the recipient, so here we are talking about patient safety, is one that does not expose the provider to any avoidable risk, and here we are talking about the safety of the healthcare workers, and does not result in any waste that is dangerous for the community, and here we are talking about healthcare waste management. To achieve this, we have identified seven key steps, which are first to have the injection prepared on a clean, dedicated workspace that is free from any blood contamination. Second key step is the provider should wash his hands. And here I would like to tell Benedetta that we've been working on hand hygiene since the first day while talking about injection safety. And hand hygiene is a key step if we want to ensure safe injection practices. Third step is that we need to use a sterile syringe and needle for each patient. And the campaign we launched at that time is one syringe, one needle, one patient. No reuse is admitted at all. The fourth key step is that medication and diluent should be drawn from a sterile vial, and this poses the problem here of multi-dose vials contamination. Fifth step, the skin should be cleaned before the injection. Sixth step, the used syringe and needle should be collected in a puncture and liquid-proof container as a single unit without any further manipulation. And many people were asking about removing the needle and discarding the syringe. WHO recommendation is very clear on this. The whole syringe and needle should be discarded as a single unit immediately after the injection. And finally, last but not least, we need to have a safe sharps waste management implemented everywhere and based on the option selected by the country, because there is no one-size-fits-all option for healthcare waste management in countries. Based on these and on this definition, the objectives of the Injection Safety Program and of the Safe Injection Global Network are, first of all, to ensure patient safety, of course. And this can be achieved through reduction of unnecessary injections. We definitely need to work on reducing the number of unnecessary injections and to prevent the reuse of injection equipment. And we'll see later how this reuse can be prevented. The second objective is to ensure healthcare worker safety, and this goes through three main components: needle stick injury prevention, based on training, and based on procurement of safety engineered devices. We'll see later during the presentation, I'll give you examples and we'll show you some samples of these safety devices. And we also need to have sharps boxes at the arm's reach of the healthcare worker to be able to discard and immediately collect the used device into these containers. Of course, hepatitis B vaccination is key, and there was a World Health Assembly resolution in 2006 urging all member states and all countries to immunize all their healthcare workers against hepatitis B, ideally when they start their health school, whether it is a medical school or nursing school, but at least if this is not possible, at least when they start working to protect them against hepatitis B. And the third component is the provision of post-exposure prophylaxis in case of needle stick injury. Besides the fact that we need to establish a needle stick injury surveillance and management system. And the third objective of the program is to ensure the safety of the community at large, and this goes through the safe sharps waste management collection and the medical waste at large. To achieve prevention, to achieve all these objectives and to achieve prevention and ensure rational and safe use of injections, a multidisciplinary approach is needed. And first, we need to change the behavior of the healthcare providers and patients, to decrease injection overuse, to decrease injection overprescription, and also to achieve injection safety. Second thing, there should be provision, as we saw earlier, that sometimes healthcare workers are reusing injection devices because they don't have enough syringes. We need to ensure the provision of sufficient quantities of appropriate injection equipment and infection control supplies. And the third approach is a sharps waste management system that should be established to ensure that disposable equipment is destroyed and not reused. So what are the other important thing is innovation in technology as a supporting mechanism and key to supporting safer injection practices. Technology has definitely a role to play in supporting safe use of injections. First of all, newer injection devices are being developed, including auto-disabled syringes for immunization. We say auto-disabled because they inactivate themselves after use, and we are not able to reuse them anymore. Needleless devices, meaning devices without needles, are under development. This would solve at once all the problems related to unsafe injections, including reuse, including needle stick injuries, and including sharps waste management. And we are eagerly waiting for these devices to be on the market. In addition, we need to look at newer waste management options and to ensure either we destroy properly the sharps, small-scale incinerators for rural primary care centers, although they are not anymore encouraged by WHO unless they are properly built and properly operated. Now we are more and more focusing on thermal processing to melt the syringes and needles into an innocuous plastic cake and waste volume reduction through development of better devices. The following slide summarizes, I've put pictures of the new, what we call the safety engineered injection devices. So the first row of syringes, these are the needle stick injury prevention syringes. They have shields on the needle in order, but this is an active mechanism and it relies on healthcare workers' compliance. Otherwise, if the healthcare worker doesn't push the shield on the needle can be not only reused, but it can also put the healthcare worker at risk of injections. The lower row represented is images about the retractable syringes. And retractable syringes exist in two options, whether they are automatic, meaning that once we give the injection, the needle automatically retracts into the barrel of the syringe, and here all problems of injections are solved at once, no reuse, no stick injury, and no sharps waste. But the other option is the manual retractable needle. Once we give the injection, we need to pull back the piston, and while pulling back the piston, the needle retracts into the barrel, and it becomes is hidden in the barrel. Other safe technologies being now studied, the non-sharps needles, the plastic needles for reconstitution. These will be really helpful to decrease and to diminish the number of used sharps and needles. The pre-filled devices and other options and devices under development now. The Science Strategic Framework has two broad objectives. Under the first one, innovation in approaches, The sign associates want to implement pilot interventions aiming at safe and appropriate use of injections and to achieve large-scale introductions of newer technologies that support a safer use of injections. And this is what my friend Benedetta Allegranzi was talking about when she introduced the session, when she was talking about this joint and collaborative work we started a few weeks ago about calling on use of these newer technologies and to phase out syringes which were supposed to be used once, but then we saw that they were being reused, and now we are calling and trying to make sure that all countries would switch, would phase out the single-use syringes and replace them by safer reuse prevention syringes that are available on the market. And the second strategic framework, which is achieving safe and appropriate use of injections, SIGN wants to obtain the implementation of national policies and plans for safe and appropriate use of injections in all countries worldwide and to promote injection safety in donor or lender-funded services making use of injections. And here I think it is very important to have the donors and development partners commit to injection safety by procuring for those who are procuring injectable medications, to procure at the same time matching quantities of safety-engineered injection devices, but also sharps containers to make the whole process safe for the patient and for the healthcare worker. The other aspect I would like to talk about now is that the WHO program and the Safe Injection Global Network recognizes the need to evaluate all prevention activities. Under the what gets measured gets done principle, SIGN wants to use process indicators to measure injection frequency and the proportion of safe injections, but also SIGN wants to make use of outcome indicators, which those include the incidence of injection-associated infections with bloodborne pathogens and the incidence of injection-associated abscesses. The last one is easier, as you can imagine, to follow up and to measure. The other one needs a lot more sophisticated surveillance system to be able to document the incidence of injection-associated infections, but we do have pilot sites for this surveillance type. How is WHO and SIGN supporting countries to achieve safe and rational use of injection? Several areas of collaboration. First of all, fundraising. Safety comes at a cost, and injection safety has a price. So, and in the majority of low and middle income countries, it is difficult to come and ask a minister of health or a minister of finance to dedicate more money to injection safety while they have other many competing health issues to address. So SIGN supports a country through fundraising for injection safety programs, and it does it through major development partners and major donors and lenders like Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, the Global Fund, CDC, USAID, and other partners involved in injection safety. And at country level, and upon request, SIGN and the WHO Injection Safety Program provide technical support, whether it is for injection safety assessment. And if you look at the following slide, this is the area and the way WHO provides support to countries, and it follows the quality and safety cycle. It could be through identifying problems, through injection safety assessment, based on these findings, development of strategies and programs, their implementation, their monitoring and evaluation to be able to identify gaps and then to go like this in this cycle of quality and safety. Now, 10 years later, where are we? I wanted to share with you these results, although they are still under review, they are still work in progress, they have not been yet cleared by WHO, but I just wanted to share them with you just to give you an idea of where we were between 2001, the first global burden of disease evaluation done by WHO, and the update, which was done in 2008 but completed in 2010 and is now in the clearance process and the peer review process. The first slide is a comparison by WHO region of the number of injections per person per year and comparison of the reuse rate from 2001 and 2008. I have highlighted in red areas where things got worse. And just to take an example, I'm looking now at Eastern Europe. First column number of injections per person per year. It was bad already, 3.5, but now it is becoming really scary, 11.7 injections per person per year. But we still need to check and to validate these results. And even though if it's not 11.7, it will still be a high number of injections per person per year, and we definitely need to do something about this overuse of injections in Eastern Europe, just to take it as an example only. It's looking at the reuse rate now. You see that in the Caribbean and Central, Southern, and Tropical Latin America, things the reuse rate jumped from 1.2 in 2001 to 20% reuse rate in 2008. And here something must be explored. We need to understand what is happening there, what is going on, and what needs to be done. We already have an idea about the reasons behind this number of injections, which is exploding in some regions of the world, and the reuse rate. We know that more and more there is a demand for injections from the informal sector. So people are going to the informal sector for several reasons. I wish I had enough time to address these reasons, but including they are closer to the patients, they cost a lot less money than going to the official healthcare service or department, and sometimes it's lack of public health facilities or private health facilities. So people go to informal sector, and this was documented in some areas, but we need to further explore these data and to identify priorities, actions, where we need to go very quickly to address all these issues. The following slides, we just wanted to put all these results on a map. And the first slide is about the number of injections per person per year. And I have put the red arrows to show where things are worse. Number of injections increased from 2001, and the one which is really striking is the Central Asia and Central Europe. But again, we need to validate this, and we need to look closer to these figures. The following chart is about reuse of devices, and you see that in the Americas, this rate has increased, jumping from 1.2 to 20%, and in Andean Latin America, it went from 11% to 20%. But even in other regions where the reuse rate went down, we can see that, like in South Asia, the reuse rate is still at 30%, which is enormous, which is huge nowadays, and is unacceptable. So we might need to run there and to see what needs to be done and what we should be doing to prevent these reuse of injection equipment. Putting all these figures in tables and comparing the contribution of unsafe injections at global level, we talked earlier about program evaluation, and this is a kind of program evaluation. And again, I'm sharing these with you, but they are still in progress, and they should not be shared or disseminated, please, at this point. And we can see that the number of injections globally went from 16.7 in 2001 to 18.3 billion injections, but that we can understand and we can accept because the world population is increasing, so the number of injections should be increasing. But a reuse rate globally went from 40% in 2001 to 12.3% in 2008, which is a very nice achievement. If we look only at results globally, we can be happy of what we did. But then we shouldn't be only looking at global level, but go further down and look at regions as we just did with the previous slides. Hepatitis B cases dropped from 32% of all new cases in 2001 to 16%. And hepatitis C dropped tremendously from 40% to only 6%. The HIV figures need still to be reviewed. There have been a decrease, but this is a very sensitive issue and it is still under review. So to summarize this, in 2008, we can say that reduction in unsafe therapeutic injection prevented almost 500,000 HIV infections and 5 million hepatitis B infections. And the use of auto-disabled syringes for immunization injections prevented all these infections and abscesses in children, which is quite, which we can quite be happy and proud of these achievements. Are we done with injection safety? I'm afraid that we are not done yet. And you saw from the previous slides that we still have an immense problem of reuse of injection equipment. We still have a problem in some regions. We still have an immense problem of overuse of injections. We, as mentioned before, to prevent reuse of injection equipment, we do have safety devices. Auto-disabled syringes constituted a very successful initiative for immunization injections, but we are only talking about 5 or 10% of all injections. And this achievement was achieved thanks to the contribution of this global initiative, which was done by Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, which started providing all vaccines together with AD syringes and sharps boxes for all immunization for Gavi-eligible countries. For therapeutic injections, and now we are talking about 17 billion maybe, it's another story. Reuse prevention and stick injury prevention devices for therapeutic injections are definitely available, but they are still out of the reach of developing countries because of the price, because they are more expensive, because we need to invest more to buy them and to ask the ministries of health and finance to increase the budget for procurement of injection equipment, which is not that easy. Remaining problems in the curative services, of course, as mentioned, the number of injections is much higher, and safe practices are highly prevalent. The informal, the informal and private sectors are difficult to reach, and competing priorities in the current financial crisis to put money in injection safety, and overuse, unfortunately, of injections is still an issue in several countries we need to look at. Are unsafe injection practices a problem only in developing countries? The answer is no. And the following slide, I wanted to summarize main and key results and studies presented by Thompson and Al about healthcare-associated hepatitis B and C virus transmission through unsafe injection practices between 1998 and 2008 in the United States. And as you can see, unsafe injections did transmit hepatitis C and hepatitis B in American patients And again, here it's because of the reuse of the needle of the syringe while changing the needle. So, in conclusion, we can say that injection overuse and breaks in injection safety combine to lead to large-scale bloodborne pathogen transmission. That prevention should be achieved through multidisciplinary approaches to reduce overuse and to improve safety. That SIGN provides an opportunity to exchange information, advocate together, and adopt a common strategic framework. And here I would like to finish by a call. If you would like, and I would like you to participate in the Safe Injection Global Network and to join our weekly moderated internet discussion, please send us a note at sign@who.int, and we'll be happy to add your name to the listserv, and you'll be receiving the weekly newsletter. I'm sharp on time. I didn't think I will be able to keep right on time. I would like to thank you very much for your attention. I hope this was this gave you a flavor and an overview about what is going on in the area of injection safety. And please feel free to send any question or further clarification you feel like asking to me or to Benedetta at the email address at the end of the last slide. Thank you very much. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Selma, for this outstanding, comprehensive presentation, which included also some unpublished data that we invite all users not to disseminate, but have given us really a different perspective and a very good update. So many, many thanks, Selma. As you all know, there is no possibility to ask questions, but maybe I would like to take some more minutes and ask a couple of questions to Selma, given her huge experience in this field. So my first question is whether you can provide one country experience in terms of real improvement in this field over the last years, according to your experience. And the second question is related to how much do you feel education is important for healthcare workers to improve in this field? Because one may think that the major determinant of the problem is actually lack of resources in developing countries to provide a higher number of syringes or needles. So problems in resources and procedures. But I'm afraid there is also lack of knowledge in terms of the harm and of potential transmission of these viruses and probably other infections as well. So I would like to ask you this second question about education, also according to your experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Benedetta, for these two questions. First of all, the first is about success stories, and hopefully, otherwise, we'll be very, very disappointed and with our work. We were able to document success stories in injection safety in several countries, and this was done through a first assessment because, as I mentioned, support from the injection safety program is provided to countries upon request. And in those countries which requested support to address injection safety issues, we were able to have a comprehensive plan, starting with an injection safety assessment to be able to document what are the gaps and the needs, whether they are in terms of training, as you mentioned, Benedetta, or needs in terms of equipment and supplies, and needs in any other ways that needs to be addressed through this program. The second step was to develop together with the Ministry of Health and the people in the country a comprehensive strategy, and including activities, timelines, and all the steps, you know, an operational plan and implement injection safety project. And then at the end, reassess injection safety using the same injection safety assessment tool to see where we are, whether we were successful, and if we are successful, which areas do we manage to address and to make safer, and which were the failures, and where work needed to be done. Still, or much work, more work needed to be done. And for this, the program is now developing a database. I will be happy to put on the website and to publish very shortly. It's a database on country success stories, where you can find very nice stories about countries which succeeded to address unsafe injections and safe sharps waste management, and to document progress. Your second question is about education. I agree that education is a major component to be able to address injection, to ensure injection safety, and to ensure rational use of injections. But as you saw in the beginning of the presentation, education is not sufficient. We need also a very strong behavior change strategy. Because just very quickly, not to take too much of your time, we looked among the things we look at when we make the assessment is we look at the two-hand recapping of the needle following the injection. And we saw the two-hand recapping occurring in the majority of the countries where we went, and leading to lots of needle stick injuries in healthcare workers. And when we asked healthcare workers why they are recapping the needle while they have a sharps container sitting just next to them, we had several responses, but the major ones is either I do it because I was taught to do so. Yeah. So when I was trained, I was told to recap the needle because at that time maybe sharps containers were not available. And it was difficult for these healthcare workers to change behavior even if the work environment has changed and they have now sharps containers which they can afford not to recap the needles while using them. And the second very frequent response was, I do it without even thinking about it. It's a mechanical gesture. And yes, education is very important, but we also need a very strong behavior change component and awareness raising about all the risks related to unsafe and overuse of injections.
Thank you very much, Salma, for your answers, bringing your experience and also some additional data from studies. So we are at the end of this teleclass today. I would like to remind all of you the next date for the WHO free teleclasses on infection control. We will have another internationally well-known expert, Professor Sanjay Sant from the USA, delivering a presentation entitled Implementing Change, the Technical and Social Adaptive Aspects of Preventing Catheter-Related Associated Urinary Tract Infections. This will be on 17th of April at 12:30 p.m. New York time. So please join us for this very important presentation too. And with this, I will conclude and say goodbye and thank you to all of you for following us and listening to this presentation today. Goodbye.